SPIC star witness Dan Machilla's testimony is far from over. It's been a week of denials, further accusations leveled against Machilla, and allegations of political interference as well. Business Day reporter Warren Thompson joins us to piece together everything that has played out at the PIC inquiry this week. Warren, thanks so much for joining us this evening. So we touched base with you at the start of the week. A week into hearing testimony, we've got a lot of people having been thrown under the bus.
Yes, it's been a very interesting week after a bit of a slow start, Alicia, because we had word initially before he had even started testifying that Dr. Machilla's lengthy statement, had only been received by the commission on Friday evening, which was contrary to the agreement that the commission had struck with him and his lawyers. And then it was missing some of the documents that are attached typically in the annexures. So after a pretty slow start, we did get into it, and certainly what I noted for me was the first kind of initial theme around his testimony was the huge amount of pressure he's been under as the PIC's chief investment officer for the 15 years from roughly 2003 till his resignation in 2018. And then that progressed, as we saw, into how some of these deals and some of this pressure demonstrated itself with the big one yesterday, that he had been specifically asked by Zweli Mkhize, the ANC's Treasurer General, in 2016 to fund one of the ANC's prominent events in the January 8th statement. Mm. And that ultimately prompted a response from Dr. Mkhize, where he said that he thinks that Machilla might have misconstrued the invitation to the event or a dinner to the event of that sort. And so we have this situation now where it's ultimately the commissioners that are going to have to try and ascertain what they believe and who they believe in their final report.
One can only imagine that this opens up a whole new can of worms as people want to defend their names as this all progresses. In the interim, though, I mean, we've got some of the points that Dan Machilla has put on the table. Yes, holding some merit, but it's flawed by the role he played or didn't play amidst it all, I guess.
Absolutely. So obviously he was the chief investment officer since the PIC corporatized, but he was the CEO. And after painting a very clear picture of the immense pressure he was under and the entitlement that he saw from senior politicians at what he calls most political parties that would approach him to fund all of these transactions of associates and family members, etc., etc., he was taken up quite stringently by Commissioner Jill Marcus on the fact that, well, if you are you're getting all this political pressure, what protocols did you put in place as the chief executive officer or the chief investment officer to protect the integrity of the institution from political influence, and people trying to curry favor with him in order to access this enormous amount of capital they look after? And he didn't have too much to say on that. He was reflective and did concede that maybe he should have put things in place. For instance, like when ministers would call him, he would go and attend meetings without an associate from the PIC going with him, without minutes of meetings that took place. So it all kind of adds up to the situation where you have a chief executive officer that was under repeated pressure to do deals that might not have made commercial sense, but didn't really put too much in place. We've subsequently heard from the PIC that they've now developed a politically exposed persons policy that they're busy putting together. But, for so long it wasn't like that, and it obviously opens the door to these allegations that have been made.
It's corporate governance structures like that that become imperative, specifically when you're dealing with a very tumultuous political environment like the one we've seen, as all of this has progressed, where we've seen various cabinet reshuffles make a job like that of CEO of the PIC one very difficult to manage if you've got a minister sitting as a chair, playing musical chairs all the time.
Exactly. That was one thing he was very clear on, is that the practice, the established practice of appointing the deputy finance minister's chair was not one he favored. He talked about just the organization becoming stationary every time there was a cabinet reshuffle, because they then have to induct the new minister into the organization, explain the processes, how they worked, what the responsibilities were. And that typically left them in a position where they couldn't get to things getting done. Now, board meetings approving corporate plans, regulatory filings, et cetera, et cetera. And so it's quite interesting that with the new board that's been announced by the president, or certainly the finance minister yesterday, where we're not sure who is in contention to become the chair, that it definitely looks clear that it's not going to be the deputy minister of finance. So certainly something that puts Mr. Imbeweni and President Ramaphosa on a bit of a collision course with the unions that have said they've lobbied so hard to make the deputy finance minister the chairperson.
I've got to ask, though, political interference and entitlement of political elite aside, to what extent are we seeing businesses getting caught up in all of this? Because there are always two sides to a transaction.
Absolutely. So a couple of times we've seen, and I think in terms of his testimony now, Dr. Majilla has just started talking about these separate transactions that have come under the spotlight, these controversial deals. The first one was this deal to fund a BEE stake into Total South Africa, where I think his testimony got a bit flimsy. But certainly we're going to hear more of this, and you've got companies like SA Home Loans, where we had by one account, a very bizarre situation where you had the CEO of Standard Bank telling the CEO of the PIC that he was going to report him to regulators because of this session letter in which Dr. Majilla apparently agreed to cede fees to one of the consortiums. But we're going to get all into that next week in this testimony. And really, if you're a business, established business, you're probably looking at the PIC that might want to come on board as a partner in a new light after the testimony we've heard thus far at the Commission.
Well, Eskom case in point today, I guess. So we'll see how that all progresses. At the end of the day, though, I mean, with us, as I said at the top of the show, not even halfway through Dan Machilla's testimony at this stage, this is all going to be taking a lot longer than initially anticipated.
Yes, and of course, the terms of reference and the extended grant that the Commission sought from the President, it was extended, I think, from the end of, might have been end of June to the end of July to facilitate all this testimony. In contrast to the Zondo Commission, which has about 100 investigators, the PIC Commission has just four, and they started looking at basically a handful of transactions. They're now up to about 36 to 38, as I understand it. So this is a commission whose terms of reference were very broad in the beginning, and the number of transactions seems to be increasing, as well as the fact that some of these people that the likes of Dr. Majilla have now doorstopped by way of names will want to exercise their right to come and clear their name at the commission. So we could be here for a lot longer.
Absolutely. Well, you've got your work cut out for you, Warren, and certainly lots to keep you busy over the next few months. Let's leave it there. Thanks so much for having joined us in studio this evening. Of course, that Business Day reporter, Warren Thompson.